Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me Wednesday evening here. If you're joining me live over on reallibertymedia.com, or if you're listening on podcasts, you should come over and listen to us live on Real Liberty Media. Get in the chat room, join the conversation. Hey, it's 4:20. We're going to be having a little bit of fun today, and we might as well start out with a little fun. Oh, that didn't work so well. Hang on. We got to fix things up here. We got to make it right. That's what we got to do. If I knew what I was doing. Oh, hope you guys had a great day. It is crazy weather here in Oregon. I'm telling you, we went from snow last week, which is really unusual, to, you know, today it's just going to be crazy. Just hang on. I want to do this again. Why is that not? Oh, here we go. Oh, come on. Oh, this is aggravating. I'll get it. Just give me some time. I told you we're going to be having some fun. Okay, this is what we got to do. We got to do something else that's longer. No, we can do it. We can do this. Let's hang. Oh my God, just about can't get it done in time. Oh, okay, because it finishes. But never mind. Never mind, that didn't work so good. Oh well, it was, it doesn't matter what it was. Anyway, the weather's crazy here today. I might even get knocked off the air because we have like even the national, the Weather Channel was featuring the Pacific Northwest having like inclement weather, which you never hear about that, especially on the Weather Channel. But, you know, we got this unstable atmosphere. We got rain and, you know, wind and lightning in the forecast. And we're a Torcon too, for crying out loud. So, you know, Torcon, tornado condition, Torcon. And we're never even in a one. And when we have had tornadoes in the past, it's been like really unusual, but now they're actually saying, you know, there's, you know, a Torcon 2, condition 2, like, you know, higher than a condition 1, I guess. Oh my goodness, hang on one sec, gotta take a little break. Let's put some, no, we're not gonna put any music on. We are just gonna mute for a sec. You know, I just got home, had to rush in, kind of get set up. I'm ready to go. I have a few things I want to talk about tonight, but we're going to be playing some music, have some fun, enjoy the 420 day. Everybody pretty much knows what 420 is all about. Although, you know, just in case, everybody knows. I'm not going to go into it. Basically, it was a time after school when everybody got together and smoked weed, you know, back in the day. 420, you know, 420, and today is 420. oh, that's right, it is Hitler's birthday, that's right, and it was somebody else, oh, a friend of mine, no, she was born on 419, but I always thought she should have been born on 420. I need a rim shot, for sure. Okay, the big news of the week, besides it being 420, is I finally eliminated Windows from my entire system. Windows will no longer taunt me. I'm going to tell you guys the truth. It literally would give me anxiety thinking about having to boot up the Windows side of this machine. Now, some of you know I've been using Linux since 1999, but I, you know what? For a while, I didn't even have a system because I didn't need one. You know, everybody has a smartphone. And, you know, I was like, oh, I don't need desktop anymore. Don't need laptop anymore. I don't need any operating system anymore. So I kind of got away from it a little bit. And then during the pandemic, when everybody was first locked down, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to build a desktop computer system so I can play some games. And it gave me something to do, you know, while I'm at home doing nothing, it gave me something to look forward to. So I started shopping for parts, and I would wait for parts to go on sale, and then I put this whole system together. And of course, being a Linux lover at heart, I put Linux on it, but at the time, I didn't realize how good gaming had got on Linux. And so I had a Windows 10 disk that I bought also at the same time. And I installed it, and so I had a dual boot system, so I could boot up into Windows or I could boot up into Linux, you know, just take the choice at the boot up screen, and away you go. Well, I hated Windows before I ever, honest to God, I think I can go back to about Windows 98. Oh, maybe the one that followed 98. What was that? Millennium. Oh, ME. Oh my God. What a piece of crap that was. That was horrible. Yeah. And that's actually the reason I started using Linux was because of Y2K. And for those of you who weren't born yet, you know, that was when we went from 1999 to 2000, and everybody thought the computers were all going to crap the bed and quit working. And so in 1999, I started looking at other operating systems. I actually belonged to a little group of guys. We wrote software for companies just for fun because we were all nerds. And we would get together in town in McMinnville, and we just take on projects. People would hear about us and say, hey, could you write us some software for this, that, or the other thing? And we'd be like, well, don't know, but we'll give it a go. So we would, we all brought our own little bit of expertise to the table. There were really four of us. Really, there were three main guys that really were serious about it all the time. And there was four or five guys involved. So there's one or two other guys who were involved in some degree or another at different times. But anyway, so because I was part of that group and kind of talked to some local people who also did software development, you know, some people would talk about Linux and it'd be like, I didn't understand it at the time, and a lot of people don't understand it today. And that's fine. But man, if you want to experience true freedom using your computer system, switch to Linux for crying out loud. Like, get rid of your Windows system, then just take the leap of faith that it's going to be fine, because it is going to be fine. I was going to write a big eulogy for my Windows partition because I was so glad that it's gone. And then I started thinking about all the stuff I hated about Windows. And I actually went online and looked up some other complaint groups and people who have the top 20 things that Windows sucks at. And you know what? Here's the deal. Like, if you use Windows, that's fine. That's good. You know, use whatever that makes your life easy, I guess. But man, if I could talk everybody in the world into getting into Linux, if I could help them all get onto Linux and get away from their Windows systems, man, I think it would be so much better. I think everybody would be so much happier. So look, ever since I got rid of Windows, now my computer doesn't go to that little boot up screen that you can pick Windows or Linux. It just fires right up into Linux. Now when I reboot, I don't mind rebooting my Linux system, which I know you don't have to. You know, I know there are ways you can like restart it or clean it up and whatever, but I always do a reboot before I do my show. I always do a reboot after I update the kernel or whatever, but it's so fast to reboot the system. And here, I'm going to tell you another Windows nightmare, by the way. So the thing that gave me the most anxiety about booting up Windows was this one thing, the damn update. So, and maybe there's a way around this too. Like, I fixed this on my daughter-in-law's computer. Like, she dropped off a laptop about 2 weeks ago, I think, maybe three, and asked if I could see what was making it run so slow. And of course, I had that conversation with her, like, you know, you really ought to think about putting Linux on this machine. And, you know, I understand everybody's hesitancy. Like, you know, they're so afraid they're not going to be able to do something. Like, she's into real estate. She's a real estate agent. And I know she's just afraid of, like, diving in and having to go find out how you do stuff. Because the programs have different names. I mean, that's really the bottom line. Like, instead of Microsoft Office, I use, what do I use? I use LibreOffice, I'm pretty sure. Let me just check. Yeah, I use LibreOffice. Sometimes it's called OpenOffice, depending. I mean, they're both similar office suites. So you can do everything. You can make a slideshow. You can use a database or what do they call it, a spreadsheet. You can write, make web pages. You can do text. You can format, you know, documents and fonts. You can do everything you can do in Microsoft Office. So, but it's called LibreOffice. Okay, so you got to figure out how to do that. And then one of the big things that I think I ran into with somebody before is, so I always use OpenOffice or LibreOffice, and I have for a very long time, because you can even use that on a Windows operating system. So I would write a document in LibreOffice, and they have their own document extensions. Well, if you send that document in that format to somebody, it's likely they're not going to be able to read it. The beauty of OpenOffice is you can actually save the document in any Windows version or Microsoft Office version extension that they have. So for some people, yeah, that might be an extra step, but really it's not. It could be the same step, because you don't have to save your documents in the default document setting. You can set your default to be Microsoft Office 97, 10, whatever. You can just set it to be the default extension. So, if you were, you know, talking to people who are all on Microsoft systems and they don't know about LibreOffice or OpenOffice, you just save it in the Microsoft extension and send it to them, and they wouldn't know the difference. They literally wouldn't know the difference. You'd be the only one that knew that you wrote that in LibreOffice. But one of the nightmares that I would have about firing up the Windows system is that it was going to do an update. Like, and you never know when it's going to do an update. You know, you just start up your system and it just goes into the update mode, you know, like, Windows is preparing your system, you know, Windows is, you know, don't turn off your computer. And the thing that really pissed me off about Windows, like forever, is that it wouldn't let you do stuff. Like, it has to freeze up the whole system to do its thing, you know, and sometimes it won't even go past the login screen or the update screen. Like when you restart after it's, you know, supposedly done getting its update files, and it just goes into that, you know, shutdown mode with the, you know, 85% complete, and then it takes like an hour to get the other 15%. But what I really hated about it, especially having had experience with Linux for a long time, Linux doesn't stop you from doing anything when it's doing its update. I literally can do a kernel update, which kernel is the brain of the program, the most important part. You can literally keep doing everything you're doing. Like right now, I could literally go down and hit my update on, and if it had a kernel in it, it would literally, I could continue to do the show. I've got some meters over here I'm looking at. I'm recording. I'm playing. I have a timer going to remind me that I'm going into the next segment. I have the broadcasting software running. You know, I'm connected to the internet. What else do I have going here? I have Pulse Audio going. I have Q-Tractor going. I have Audacity running. I have Jack Audio Control Kit running and Q-Jack Control. I mean, I have all this stuff running. I could literally hit that update. It would update that kernel and just tell me in a nice little note, you need to reboot before the update will take effect. Now, that's only for the kernel. Every other piece of software that you have to get an update for in Linux, it'll literally just update it while you're using the system. And when it's done, it's updated. And it won't interrupt you. It won't stop you from doing anything. Like, you can literally keep doing whatever it is you're doing with this one little caveat. Whoops, I hit the mic. And that is, if one of your browsers needs an update and you have that browser open, it'll tell you that you have to close the browser so it can update it. That's the only thing. And it's so fast, and also, like, a lot of browsers have, like, reload the last pages I was using, so it's no big deal. You just close the browser, you do the update, you open the browser, boom. You're back right where you left off with all of the, you know, tabs, you know, everything logged in or out, however you left it, that's how it comes back up. Oh, man, I was thinking of something when I was talking about that. There was also, I was going to talk about the file. There's different kind of file systems that you can set up your Linux operating system to use. One of those file systems actually will keep track of whatever is going on your computer, and you could literally have a blackout. Like, this second my system goes dark, fire up the system, and even if you were typing a document and you hadn't hit save, it will restore that document at the exact character you were typing. Yeah, Windows doesn't do that. Windows doesn't do a lot of things. But Windows, you know, you got to admit, they captured the market a long time ago. And why do I talk about Linux so much? Why do I encourage people to use Linux, especially if you have a, you know, a small business, if you're a small business owner, if you have a little homestead and you keep records on your computer? I mean, why support a commercial operating system when you can have everything you need in a free open source operating system? Linux is supported by the users. So, people actually get, like, volunteer to keep certain software going. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes people put out a package. Hang on. Drink time. You know, sometimes people put out a software package, you know, and it's kind of good at first, and then, you know, the people don't keep it updated, or they don't kind of keep up with the, you know, other changes and just technology in general, and they lose interest in supporting their software, and that software dies. Well, you know, that's the way it goes. I mean, you know, you can do that. I mean, if you create a good software and people really like it and you don't continue to support it, they're going to move on to something else. And the beauty of Linux also being community supported and free. I mean, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. The whole entire studio I'm running right now didn't cost me a dime. Oh, that's a lie. I mean, the microphone, yeah. The hardware stuff, yeah, that costs money. The software didn't cost anything, none of it. It took me a little while to figure out how to use it, but really, I don't think that's much of a disaster or setback. you know, it actually kind of enhanced my appreciation of this whole thing, the whole audio thing, learning how to do it and making it happen. But, yeah, it's all free. I mean, it's literally doesn't cost you money. The updates come all the time. Security updates come all the time. I don't mean like every 5 minutes. I mean, when there's a need to have a security update, that security update is delivered. Like, you get a notice, hey, we have a security update for you. Better put it on there, you know, because there might be some vulnerability. And that brings me to another point about Linux and why I think it's so awesome. So Linux divides up your system so that the main part of the system hackers can't really get to. Like, they can hack a user account, you know, like they can hack my personal user account, and yeah, they could wipe out my entire, you know, all of my files, I suppose, if they can hack into my system and hack Linux. Yeah, they could probably do that. But, I mean, if you have your backups going, that wouldn't be a disaster. But it protects the main part of the program. So, you know, hackers really don't spend a lot of time trying to get into them because they're very secure. And that part is free, too. And like I was saying, so you install the system, you set up your securities and your notifications about updates so that you keep them up to date in a timely manner. Like, you can set your notifications to remind you every time there's a new update. And then, you know, you see that there's a couple updates of programs you don't use, no big deal. Don't even do it. And then one comes up that it's the program you use or it's a security update. Well, then that's a good time to install all of them, you know, and they just install. They install very fast, like I say, don't interrupt you or whatever. But getting back to that, I'm going to tell you the nightmares I had with Windows and why it's gone now. And I'm not kidding. I have such a sense of relief that Windows is gone because I had such anxiety about, like, let's say there was something. Okay, the last thing I looked for was one of my crypto wallets. And I knew I had that wallet on the Windows system. So just imagine this. I was all ready to get rid of Windows, and I have this one wallet, and it didn't have much in it. I bought $50 worth of coin, I don't know, months ago. And so I was like, oh, God, I got to go get that wallet. And I'm not kidding. I was dreading firing up Windows even for that short amount of time because, number one, I figured it had been so long since I'd been on it that it would have to do an update, which means I was going to be sitting in the Windows penalty box while it does its damn update and then find out if my wallet is there and if I remember the passphrase and all that stuff to open it, and then, you know, hopefully get off of Windows and hope that Windows doesn't screw with my Linux partition. Because two times in the past 2 years, Windows did an update and it changed the permissions on my partition for Linux. And it changed the permissions on the disks so that I couldn't actually access disks that I actually owned. And then it wouldn't let me write to those disks because it had changed the permissions to them. And I'm sure some genius, Windows Linux genius, will probably tell me. In fact, I kind of know that there's a solution I could have gone through to get my data back and restore my system. But like, even the backups I was doing at the time, they were on one of the drives that Windows changed the permissions to, so I couldn't do the backup. I couldn't pull up an image to restore because Windows locked me out of my own partition. And yeah, I know there's a way to do it. Matter of fact, I wish I would have been thinking a little bit harder. I probably would have made myself a rescue disk, gone in and fixed this. But actually, you know, hindsight being 2020, now that I have the new system up, it's all clean, beautiful, boot, there's no trash on it. It's just a great new install of Linux Mint, and I absolutely love it. And I got rid of Windows, so I don't have to go back there. I mean, I literally reformatted the partition, the entire drive that Windows was on. I used Gparted over here on my Linux side, and I wiped every last piece of data off that drive. So now I have a new, clean, free, 1 terabyte drive just for storage. I have actually plenty of storage, but it's nice to have that absolutely gone. Like gone, gone, gone. So let's just take 1 minute. I'm sure I'm not done ranting about Windows. Matter of fact, before I do this, I better think about this. Yeah, you guys all remember the last time. It was like a month ago. Was it a month ago? I think it was in early April. What is today, 21st? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think it was like April 6th or something like that, because I was getting ready to do a show. Yeah, it was on April 2nd, because I think I did the show maybe with my Windows system on the 2nd, and then on the 6th, I had reinstalled Linux and got everything set up so I could do the show on the 6th. So yeah, it was earlier this month that Windows did it to me for the last time, and it will no longer haunt my operating system. Those days are over. So let's just have a moment to lay Windows to rest. There we go. It is gone. I'm sorry that was a little loud at the beginning. Oh, I guess you really ought to try this stuff out ahead of time. Like all of it, you know, do the whole thing before you actually go live. But we don't have time for that, for crying out loud. Let's do this. Another little tribute to 420. All right. Thank you for that. Okay. So are we done having fun yet? No, we are not done having fun yet. Hey, I did kind of want to end with this on the whole computer issue. I thank God for people who make Linux happen. For all those people who actually have some talent and have the time to keep that software up and running. I'll say again, man, you really should try it out if you haven't tried it out. It's really easy to try out too, by the way. You can just put one of the images of your, you know, pick your flavor of Linux, put it on a thumb drive, put the thumb drive in your computer, change your computer boot up to boot from, you know, thumb drive, whatever you want to call it, USB. And it will actually fire up and let you use Linux and play around with it. And then when you shut down, it just goes back to your whatever your operating system is. You really should give it a try. But that's one thing I was going to say. There's so many different, like, flavors of Linux, like, from the desktop to the kernel to operating system. I mean, the, you know, layout and there's just different versions of Linux, and you can try them all out and see how you like them. And it's actually kind of fun, I think, to try something new like that out. Okay. I wanted to actually talk about some stuff that might save your life or make your life a little better. So we do have a little bit of news today. What was I thinking of at work today? Well, and the one thing that I was kind of thinking about was this whole where were those lockdowns in China?
Shanghai. I think it was Shanghai, China. But really, this applies to any city. So think about all those people and yourself if you live in a city and it's like really densely populated and there's not like a lot of land, like actual soil around, like gardens, for example, or lakes, or, you know, sources of food. Man, you're stuck. So all those people that got locked down in China, you know, it's a communist country. They're pretty serious about lockdowns. When they say lockdown, I guess you lock down. You know, or maybe probably get shot. I don't know. Okay, that might be propaganda, but I don't know. I mean, what would keep you from leaving your house if you were hungry? If it wasn't just like pure brute force? Like, I think that would be the only thing that would keep you from actually going out and getting food is that somebody, you know, was going to, I don't know what, arrest you or shoot you or whatever. I mean, they're in lockdown. You hear, if you haven't seen already, I mean, you can hear these people just like wailing in the streets because they don't have any food. They've been locked down for weeks now with no access to food. And it's kind of my point about like surviving in the city. I really can't, I really don't have any idea how to explain how you will could survive in the city. I mean, unless you already prepared well ahead of time and have a bunch of food in storage, you know, some maybe dried food, some frozen food, some canned food, and enough to get you through, you know, a long period of time. Because if, you know, the Gestapo is not letting you leave your house to go buy some food, and they're not letting people deliver food to your, you know, apartment complex or housing, you know, neighborhood, whatever, yeah, you're pretty screwed. And I don't know a lot of people that have a ton of food in storage. I know a lot of people who are trying to put a ton of food in storage, though. And I think, you know, some of those places where you can buy, you know, emergency food and emergency rations, hey, it's better than nothing. Some of them I hear are really good. I think My Patriot Supply I've heard the most of, that it's pretty good. But, I mean, you can just do, like, Bear Mountain has some meals. I mean, that's what I take when I go hiking. They're pretty dang good, man. I mean, for, you know, for anything. Like, well, no. I mean, it's not something I would want to eat every day. But it's, you know, it's dried food that you rehydrate with hot water. Or cold, I guess. And you can feed yourself for a long time. And you can buy these, you know, you can buy boxes of that stuff. You can get it at Amazon where you get, you know, you can buy like 10. One time I bought biscuits and gravy. I thought, I got to try this. I'm sure it's horrible, but I got to try it. I was actually quite shocked, and I'll tell you why. Because you just add, you know, I don't know, however many mLs of water to it, hot water, and you seal it up and you let it, you know, cook in the foil bag for a few minutes, 5 minutes, I think. And I was really thinking this is going to be really mushy and it's really going to suck. What happened was I opened that pouch and I took a bite and I had kind of not quite crunchy, but like the just right bit of biscuit with some gravy. And the biscuit wasn't mushy. It actually had a little bit of a crunch to it. So it was, you know, it was really kind of pleasing. Like, oh, it's not just plain old mush. It's actually pretty dang good. Now, good for you? Definitely not. Biscuits and gravy. Not like I was looking for health food when I picked that one out. But it was good, you know, and you could put a lot of that kind of food, a lot of that food stores pretty well. And I'm not sure about this. Like, I've had a few packages of that for a long time, like a year. And the mice haven't found it yet. So I don't know if it's sealed enough that the mice won't find it. I actually should do a test. Just put some in areas where I know there are mice and see if they actually get to it. But you could do that, or you could do like some of these survival places have a 2-week kit of food that you can buy. Some of it lasts like 30 years, which that'll tell you something about that food if it's going to last 30 years in a packet. But you can do that, you know, and you would at least have something as long as you had water. Even if you can't heat up the water, really heating up the water just speeds up the cooking process in the bag. If you just put the water in the bag, and I've actually had people tell me they do this on the trail. Like sometimes they'll just eat it dry, but I can't even imagine that. But like some of their oatmeal breakfast, they'll just put the water in the bag and zip. It's a Ziploc kind of thing on the foil bag, and they'll just zip it closed, put it in their pack, and they'll hike for a couple hours, and then they'll open that up with, they just put cold water in it, and they'll open it up and just eat it because it's still softened enough to eat, and they didn't want a hot meal anyway. They just wanted a meal. And, you know, you can add stuff to something like oatmeal. You can put a tablespoon of peanut butter in there, get a little more protein, or raisins. You can put nuts. You can put all kinds of stuff at it to those meals to make them taste better. But honestly, I mean, if you're in survival mode, I don't know how concerned you're going to be with how things taste. I think after a couple days of no food, you'd probably be pretty ready to eat just about anything and not really care about what it tastes like. Like literally, you would probably eat something that you absolutely found disgusting taste-wise, and you would be very happy that you actually had something in your body to fuel your system and help you prepare for whatever's coming next, you know, whatever the next wave is. Like right now, I'm looking out the window from the studio right here. I see this gigantic thunderhead going by right now. I'm thinking, because there's a little patch of blue sky between it and me, and I can actually see how big it is. And it's not going to cause me, you know, to have to go into survival mode, but, you know, it's what's coming next. That's the next thing coming my way. So to be prepared for it, you know, fuel the system, keep your hydration up, you know. And man, time is flying. That's good. It's kind of fun. This is kind of a funny story that happened around the homestead. My grandson asked me yesterday, as a matter of fact. I came home for lunch real quick. I didn't have a lot of time. I went in. I actually made my drink to take my supplements, and had a pen in my pocket. And he said, "Papa, why do you have a pen in your pocket?" He says, "Do you write stuff?" And I just started laughing. But think about it, man. He's 10. No, he's 12. And his entire life, he has seen people with devices. Like, I don't know how many people he's seen sit down and write stuff with a pen. As a matter of fact, even me here, when I do my show notes for the show, I'm using an editor. You know, I'm using LibreOffice, and you know, finding stuff on the internet, looking at my emails to see if there's anything new that I want to talk about. And, you know, so I'm not really using a pen to do my notes. So, yeah, people don't really use pens that much anymore. But, man, I sure do at work. If that guy saw me at work, he'd know I have to sign about, I don't know, 10 pieces of paper for every patient. It's really getting ridiculous. Okay, I want to talk about one thing I saw this week that I thought was really cool. Oh, hey, let me mention this. The Lyrian meteor shower is tonight and tomorrow night, the peak. It's not a tremendous meteor shower. You have to look in the northeast, you know, after it gets dark. You won't see them during the day. Well, you might, but it would be really rare. Look in the northeast, the Lyrid meteor shower, and it's not a very active shower. It's like 10 per hour you might see. So just imagine that, like every 6 minutes you might see one. Yeah, you're going to probably fall asleep waiting to see one. But they're out there, and it's a thing, and I always like to point it out. It's kind of fun to sit out at night. We're probably going to sit out for a while, have a little fire after it gets dark, and just see if we catch one. Or maybe when the hot tub, we'll see if we can catch one. But yeah, the peak is tonight and tomorrow night, and the mornings, especially when the air is real still and clear and cold. Good viewing times if you don't have clouds. But what I wanted to talk about, I like programs about nature. I actually like public broadcasting systems show called Nature. I know it's going to be riddled with propaganda about climate change, right? And I hope in the past, you know, I'm pretty negative about climate change, but here's the deal. I believe in climate change. I mean, it happens all the time. It's happened since the beginning of this galaxy's existence. Climate change has happened. What I'm not really crazy about is thinking that man is responsible for all climate change and everything that's bad. I just don't believe it. Sorry. And so I know when I watch a nature program, I'm going to have to, you know, like hear a lot of that propaganda. So the most recent episode of Nature, at least that I know of, is called American Arctic. And I thought that sounded really good. I was like, oh, this is cool. So it's going to talk about the Arctic, of course, the northern ice caps. And, you know, it'll cover all of the nature that is happening up in, you know, the Arctic, American Arctic. And I knew there was going to be, you know, talking about the polar bears dying and not be able to get food, blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, that's exactly what happened. Now, the reason that I watch those programs, because I love the photography, the videography. They usually do an outstanding job at capturing images. And they do a fair job of talking about wildlife. I mean, sometimes they show the true side of wildlife, you know, like a wolf taking down a caribou calf or something like that. You know, it's horrible. Life is hard in the wild. It's not easy. Well, this, of course, show lived up to my expectations. You know, there was propaganda about the polar bears disappearing, you know, and having to swim hundreds of miles to catch a baby seal. And I was thinking to myself, yeah, well, what do you think those polar bears did during the, you know, the time when Greenland was green? You know, what do you think those polar bears, you know, all of these species, all of these populations of wildlife, they go through ebbs and flows with the changing environment. Before we ever became industrialized, before we ever started running, you know, fossil fueled vehicles, these animals went through normal climate change. And what was funny that I think if you didn't really pay attention when you were watching this show, they talked about each species and how it struggled with climate change. Like the caribou had a certain amount of time that they had to make it to the, I forget, the Alaska Wildlife Refuge, I forget what it's called, there's a certain name for it. But anyway, that's where they go when the snow starts to thaw. They go from whatever grounds they're at, and they have to make this couple hundred mile trek up to the wildlife refuge to drink and get minerals from this certain area. And they were talking about how that was happening earlier and earlier. And I'm like, okay, so what? So, I mean, they can actually start earlier, right? Like, I don't know. This doesn't sound that bad to me. But the polar bears, that was a big one. Like, the polar bears have to swim further and there's less food available. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, but they'll be okay. I mean, so we won't have, you know, however many thousands of polar bears we have right now, we'll have fewer. Until the environment changes to support it. And then, so the point that you might miss if you weren't really paying attention, they actually started talking about certain bird species that are actually doing much better. And I thought, isn't this the perfect description of the cycle of life here on planet Earth? There's a constant flux. Yeah, some things don't do so well when the environment changes one way or the other. And other things do really well. And that's how the world has existed. That's how the world has continued to develop and continued to succeed and continued to flourish for all this time, is because that course of nature has taken place naturally. And why these animals can't survive, I mean, some animals are very delicate. Like, you change the tiniest bit of their environment and they go off kilter and they can't handle it. I think I've talked about this before, but in my own little area right here by our homestead, we watch coyotes and quail go through this cycle together. Because you just step into the middle of this cycle, I'm going to step into the middle of it and describe it. So let's say there's right now a certain number of coyotes, and right now there's a certain number of quail. And something happens this year that decreases the number of quail eggs that survive. Or let's say there's so many coyotes that they take out a bunch of quail babies. Well, next year there's not going to be as many quail laying eggs, which means the coyotes aren't going to have as many quail to eat. Guess what happens? Coyotes die. You know, and the number of coyotes reduces. There's fewer coyotes. They produce fewer coyotes because they know there's not enough food to support too many coyotes. The quail, I don't think, make a conscious decision one way or the other. And I'm not saying the coyotes do either, but there's some evidence that shows that, yeah, they kind of, you know, evaluate their environment and figure out how many coyote pups they can have, whether they should be reproducing or not. But so once the coyote population decreases because the number of quail has decreased, guess what? More quail survive because there's fewer coyotes. The more quail that survive, the more eggs that are laid, the more quail that are hatched, the more quail that make it to adulthood, the more eggs are laid the next season. And the coyotes are like, hey, there's more quail out here. Like, we can hear them, we can see them. Hey, it might be time to start reproducing again. And then the whole cycle repeats. So the quail number increases, the coyote population increases. Pretty soon there's too many coyotes. They eat quail. Quail disappear. Coyotes say, okay, we got to back off again and let this population remunerate. Now, of course, coyotes eat things other than quail, so it's not the only limiting factor, but it's an example of how animals adjust to their environment. I'm fairly certain in the existence of polar bears that there's been a time when they couldn't get as much food as they could at another time, and so their numbers decreased. So, anyway, it's a great show. It's called American Arctic. It's on, you know, your local public broadcasting system. Check it out. Some great scenery in there, some really beautiful stuff going on. And I thought it was really enjoyable. Okay, I was going to talk about one other thing, and I don't think I have time to do it justice, but I'm just going to hint on this a little bit right here, and then we'll shut down the show. Well, we'll probably play one more song and then shut down the show. that one more thing was lithium. There's a mine of lithium in Nevada. I'll talk about it on my next show because I want to show you the numbers that make absolutely zero sense when it comes to producing electric vehicles. And you're going to see for yourself how this is not only not going to happen, it is impossible to make it happen. And I'll leave it at that. You guys have a great week. I will catch you on Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Thanks for joining me.